The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goetz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this June 26, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz. And you got me for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. And you got me and only me. That's right. It's me alone in the studio. First time in a long time that it's been this way. This is a flash to the past for those of you who have been around for a while. And my man Christian Griffin out of town. He's on a little trip today and tomorrow through the weekend. He'll be back on Monday. I think we're going to hear from him, though. He's on a car ride, and so I believe that he is going to check in with us on the road a little bit later in the show. But, man, we got a lot to talk about here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. We're talking quarterbacks today. We're going to start the show talking about Jackson Arnold and what the expectation is, yes, but also if there is a leash on Jackson Arnold as well, or maybe a zoomed-in look on what his season could be, what it might not be, and what Auburn would do if it goes the wrong direction. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Plus, we'll talk about other quarterbacks around the SEC, some overhyped QBs, underhyped QBs, and then where Jackson Arnold kind of fits into that category. We're also going to talk some changes that are coming to college basketball that was approved yesterday by the NCAA, and then Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC, our longtime Thursday guest here on the show, will be joining us coming up at 3:30. But phone lines are open today. If you'd like to be a part of the show, comment and talk about what we're talking about or anything else that's on your mind, give me a call. I'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390 is the phone line number. Give me a call. You can be on the line. It is you and me and whatever you want to talk about on this Thursday afternoon. The text box is always open as well at 334-784-1067. And I started thinking about this today. It was really this morning, and I've seen a lot of stuff going around about Auburn schedule predictions and kind of what expectations are and things like that for Auburn, right, with this upcoming season. And we've talked so much about what this year needs to be, what it needs to look like, how it needs to go for so many different reasons, right? Recruiting and fan buy-in and literal physical buy-in, right? Monetarily, like all of these things that are up for grabs on the line this year in terms of what Auburn does on the field because of how last year went, right? Year two, year one was the wash. Year one was the whatever. Just see what happens, come in and get something done. Year two, typically, is supposed to be the, okay, let's take a step forward. We've got some talent. We're still behind, but let's see what you got. Let's see if we can win some games. Let's see if you can make something of year two and take a step in the right direction. And then year three is supposed to be, all right, you've had time. You've recruited. You have built a program now. It's time to go out and compete. But we know that year two at Auburn under Hugh Freeze didn't go that way at all. Year two took the step backwards that you're not supposed to. You went from an okay year one to a bad year two. And Christian and I have talked about this idea, and I've talked about this on several other places as well. You don't get a pass in year three because year two didn't go right. You don't. The expectations in year three don't get lowered because of what you did last year. That's not how I feel at all. I think the expectations for what year three was supposed to be are still there, which is flirt with winning 9 games, have a conversation, and have a say in November about what happens in the SEC and the college football playoff. And I think most Auburn fans are in that category. But I started thinking about that and the idea of, okay, what is it going to take to get that? What is it going to take for Auburn to win 9 games, have all the momentum coming down the stretch, a chance to win the Iron Bowl, and then have a say on what the college football playoff looks like? What will it take with that, right? You can talk about the offensive line. You can talk about the defense doing its job. You can talk about the receivers being one of the best grooms and the best groups in college football, which I think is the truth. But at the end of the day, this Auburn football team in the year 2025 will only go as far as the quarterback will take them. This team will win as many games as Jackson Arnold will allow. And it's funny, and I want somebody to correct me if I'm wrong here, because early on in the spring, throughout the spring, and even early summer too, there was this idea of a quarterback battle on the plains. There was this idea that, okay, you bring in Deuce Knight, the star-studded freshman, the future of the Auburn football program, the guy that's supposed to bring Auburn back at the quarterback spot. Then all of a sudden you bring in Jackson Arnold, the former five-star, the Oklahoma transfer who we know played on a shell of a team last year because of injuries to his receiver room. They didn't win a ton of games. His stats weren't incredible, but it's a guy that beat Alabama. You bring in those two guys, and early on it was, wow, we really could have ourselves a battle on the plains. We could have another quarterback battle in Auburn. How many times have we had that, right? But then very quickly, we learned through spring practice, and I believe Hugh Freeze said it himself, that Jackson Arnold was the man. And it made sense because my idea and mentality was, well, you don't go get a guy like that if you don't expect him to be the starter. And the fear, of course, is Deuce Knight being a freshman and not playing and eventually leaving in the transfer portal and going somewhere else. That you're going to have that fear with every other player in the country, on any team, any sport, any level. Doesn't matter. That is always a threat. And you can't coach in a way that shows you're worried about that. You've got to do what's best for the team. And I think Hugh Freeze is doing that, and I think Jackson Arnold is the best route to go as of right now. But that gets me to the conversation that I want to start today's show with. What is the leash on Jackson Arnold in 2025? Or, secondary part to that question, is there a leash on Jackson Arnold in 2025? I want to hear your thoughts. 334-321-1390 is the call-in number. You could shoot me a text as well, 334-784-1067. And I bring this up because we've had this conversation in the past. We've had this talk. We've had this talk about Bo Nix. We had this talk about Robbie Ashford. We've had this talk about Peyton Thorne. What was the leash? What was the breaking point? What was the moment or the situation that a quarterback would be removed and replaced as the starter? With Peyton Thorne, we talked a year ago. It's like, okay, well, if you win an X amount of games or you do this or you continue to turn the ball over or whatever, then you pull him and you go somewhere else. And we talked about it with several others and Robbie and all these guys on the team, right? TJ Finley was in this category. Bo Nix was in this. We've had this conversation for several years, multiple times throughout the last couple of seasons, when it comes to the Auburn football quarterback room. And so I propose that and ask, what is the leash on Jackson Arnold, if there is one at all? Because he's a year one quarterback here, right? He's not his first year in college, but this will be his second true season as a starter at this level. He's brand new to this team, brand new to this offense, brand new to the weapons that are going to be around him. This will be the best offense he's played in his career, will be the one he's in this year at Auburn with everything in front of him. The offensive line, the running back room, and all those fancy receivers out there. So is it fair in year one with a transfer quarterback who, let's be real, I don't think we've really seen the full potential of Jackson Arnold yet. Is it fair for him to have a leash? Is there a point where Hugh Freeze looks at it and says, oh man, okay, this is not going to work. We swung and missed on another quarterback. Time to go to Deuce Knight. I'm coming at this conversation personally from the idea of what's best for the football team, not what is best for Deuce Knight. And what I mean by that is what I alluded to earlier was you can't hold it against Jackson Arnold if you're worried about Deuce Knight leaving. And I'm not saying that that threat exists fully, but as I said, that threat is always there with any player anywhere at any level. Like, it's just the era that we're in. But if you're Hugh Freeze and this offensive staff, you can't look at Jackson Arnold and making him look over his shoulder after every single play like we've seen in the past because you're just trying to put Deuce Knight in hopes that he is satisfied and sticks around for another year or two or three. I don't think that's going to happen, but I'm saying you can't coach that way. And so what is the expectation for Jackson Arnold? What's the breaking point for Jackson Arnold? If Auburn starts 2-3 before you get to Georgia, do you make a change? If Auburn is 500, right? Let's say Auburn's 3-2. You get blasted by Georgia, and then you lose a couple of games you're not supposed to, right? Vanderbilt or Kentucky or Missouri or Arkansas. Do you make a change in there? Or do you say, Jackson, this is your team. This is your time. This is your season. We brought you in for a reason. I feel like that has to be the mentality here, right? That has to be what happens this season, because quarterback changes mid-season just don't go right most of the time. They normally don't work out the way that you want them to. And how many times, whether it's at Auburn or whether it's somewhere else, how many times have you seen a quarterback change mid-season? You have a starter, he's struggling for whatever reason. You go to the backup, and you end up back with the starter. How many times have you seen that in the history of college football? A lot, right? Because the backup is a backup for a reason. The starter is a starter for a reason. And I fear that's what could happen in a situation like this. If Jackson Arnold struggles early, right, with three tough road games and then Georgia, we have to remind ourselves of that. The fact that the schedule's not easy. And it will take a little bit of time for this team to gel. And I'm talking all parts of the team offensively, anyway. If the defense comes out and gives up 40 points a game, then that's not really on the quarterback now, is it? I'm talking about if we have turnovers, bad passes, bad decisions, no yards, no points, the offense is stalled. If Auburn looks like that in the first five or six games, do you make a change? And so I'm curious on where Auburn fans stand on Jackson Arnold. And maybe you just kind of broaden this conversation on what your expectations are. What do you want from Jackson Arnold? I'm genuinely just kind of curious on where the fan base is right now in terms of what you want to see from Jackson Arnold. This is a guy that threw for 63% completion percentage a year ago at Oklahoma. He had 1,400 yards, 12 touchdowns, and just 3 interceptions. The numbers don't blow you away, but you have to remind yourself of the team that he was playing on, the situation that he was in. But again, this is someone that beat Alabama, remember? This was the game that the Crimson Tide needed to really solidify themselves to make a college football playoff, and they went to Norman and embarrassed themselves. Oklahoma won this game 24-3, and if you watch that game, it wasn't even that close. Oklahoma dominated this game, mostly on defense and special teams, yes, but they did enough offensively to get the job done. Arnold in this game, passing-wise, do you remember what his stat was? in the Alabama game last year for Oklahoma what Jackson Arnold's passing stat was, his passing numbers? This man was 9 for 11. Had 11 attempts, 9 completions for 68 yards. No touchdowns, no interceptions. His longest pass was 19 yards. So almost a third of his yards came on one play, on one pass. You may ask yourself, well, how did he win? How did they do that? Well, it's because he ran all over the place. 25 carries, 131 yards is what Jackson Arnold had against Alabama last year. So you're talking about a guy that has won big games before. You're talking about Jackson Arnold, a dude who has proven he's got what it takes to win games. The question is, can you put the pieces around him to be successful? And then, I think what a lot of Auburn fans are concerned of, myself included, is does he have the play calling that will set him up for success? Does he have a head coach and an offensive coordinator and an offensive staff and an offensive game plan that will put him in positions to succeed? I saw something on X earlier this week, and it was something circulating around Peyton Thorne again and how Peyton Thorne hurt Auburn. He was bad. He ruined Auburn. It was a joke. It was just not good. It was bad, whatever word you want to use. And it was actually a good friend of mine and former co-host of the show, Carter Bird, that retweeted it and said, folks, if you dig a deep just a little bit, Peyton Thorne wasn't all that bad, and I'm with him. And I think a lot of people are in that category. Peyton Thorne wasn't that bad. Was he good? No. But he wasn't put in spots to be successful either. Look at the Oklahoma game from a year ago. It's a perfect example. There's no reason he ever should have thrown that football. Ever. He never should have been throwing in the second half at that point in the game. Ever. But that's not on him. The throw is, yes. But the decision to throw it is not on him. Not in that moment. Yes, they run a lot of RPO. We know that. But not in that moment, it wasn't. And Peyton Thorne was not put in, he was not put in spots to succeed. We cannot have a repeat of that with Jackson Arnold, who I think is much better than Peyton Thorne, who I think is much more proven than Peyton Thorne, who has a lot better skill sets than Peyton Thorne. But if you put him in crappy spots, you're in third and longs, your receivers don't catch the football, doesn't really matter how good Jackson Arnold is. I don't care if it's Joe Burrow back there. There were situations in games last year that Joe Burrow may not have gotten out of. You can't have that repeat again this year. And so when it comes to expectations or the leash for Jackson Arnold, I do think there may not be a leash. I feel that this season should be his. Unless it's just so historically, unbearably bad and he just looks like a deer in headlights. Unless this is a Jeremy Johnson situation, I don't see a reason for Arnold to be replaced at any point this year. Doesn't mean Deuce Knight won't see the field. Doesn't mean that Deuce Knight won't have some packages or won't have some plays or won't get in if Auburn is in a situation where they're up by a lot and you don't want to get Jackson hurt anymore and you want to get Deuce Knight some reps. That's great. I think that very well could happen. I just don't see why you would want to plant that idea in Jackson's head like we have seen in recent memory that he has to look over his shoulder after every play, after every bad decision, after every mistake, after something that doesn't go the way it was supposed to. You don't want him immediately looking to the sideline to see if Deuce Knight's grabbing his helmet. You don't want that. And so I'm curious on where Auburn fans stand right now. What are your expectations for Jackson Arnold? What would be a good stat line for him? What would be a good performance for him? What does the season look like if Jackson Arnold has a good year? And is there a leash? Is there a situation? Is there a number of wins or losses that you would consider making a change, even though it's his first year on the Plains? 334-321-1390. Give me a call. I'd love to hear from you. We got some people texting in the text box as well at 334-784-1067. We'll address that and more as we're off and running here on the Thursday edition of On the Line.
War Eagle. This is Coach Bruce Pearl, and you're on the line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
We continue on here on the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Again, give me a call. Want to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Does Jackson Arnold have a leash this year on when he could be replaced as the starting quarterback? I'm not predicting it. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm genuinely asking if you think there is a situation where that could happen. Because if not, this would be the first time in several years that you go into a season for Auburn where the starter or the presumed starter right at the start of the season is your guy all the way through, whether it's game one against Baylor all the way through the Iron Bowl in late November. And so want to hear your thoughts again, 334-321-1390. You can also shoot us a text in the On the Line text box, 334-784-1067, which is where we go now. Eric in Auburn makes several really, really good points. He says, what I don't understand is the long-term plan. And he's talking about the quarterbacks here. He says, if Arnold is great and goes pro next year, because remember, Arnold has 2 years of eligibility. He says, if Arnold is great and goes pro next year, that's the only outcome that doesn't get sticky. That's what I'm rooting for. If Arnold is good but not great, Arnold comes back for another year as the presumed starter. Does Deuce Knight stick around, or does he go somewhere else? If Arnold is less than average, a.k.a. Thorne 2.0, do we have any confidence that any quarterback under Hugh Freeze can do the job? And if he's bad, Freeze is gone, and we just start over. Excellent points from Eric in Auburn. And I think he is spot on with every single one of these. If Arnold is great and goes pro, Deuce Knight your quarterback, you're good to go. Don't have to worry about it. If Arnold is good and not great and comes back for another season, then you have the chance and the risk of running off Deuce Knight, or you just have a straight-up quarterback battle, which is rare in today's world of college football. If Arnold is less than average or just bad, then you start to have trust issues in Hugh Freeze, in the development of quarterbacks, which hasn't happened at Auburn in about 50 years, and there's a possibility that Hugh Freeze is not even here anyway, and you just got to start from the beginning. All of those are legitimate options. And I guess for complete positive outlook, yes, you hope that Jackson Arnold is really, really good, on the verge of great, and ends up having some NFL draft stock, decides to go that direction, and then Deuce Knight would you would assume that he would be the man, which is what they told him he would be when he was recruited here. Not for this year in particular, I don't think, but for the future of this Auburn football program, Deuce Knight is the answer. But anything less than that, yeah, it does. And the word he used is sticky, and that's exactly right. I think a quarterback battle next year could be fun, right? Let's say, just for conversation, let's play my favorite game, shall we? What if Auburn goes 8-4 this year, but they beat one of the rivals? They beat Georgia or Alabama. One or the other, whichever one, take your pick. Auburn's 8-4, but one of those wins is over Georgia or Alabama. You get to a bowl game. I don't count the result of that either way. So 8-4 with a win over one of your rivals. Jackson Arnold is, 3-1 quarterback or touchdown interception ratio. He's got, however many yards, whatever the case may be. Stats aren't really relevant here in this conversation. I'm looking at wins and losses. That's what I care about. 8-4, win over your rival, one of them. Hugh Freeze saves his job, and Arnold comes back for another season because they don't know if he's quite ready just yet. But Deuce Knight's still there. Does Deuce Knight stay? Does Deuce Knight go? What would you do? I think if you're Deuce Knight, you have to feel that if Arnold comes in and is good, not great, you have the chance to beat him out in a battle next season. Question would be, would he want to do that? Heck, would Jackson Arnold want to do that, right? Maybe they've told Deuce Knight on the back end, hey man, you are it. No matter what happens, you're the man in 2026. No matter what. right? That seems to probably be one of the more likely options, right? Unless Arnold goes just buck wild, Auburn wins 10 games, you're in the playoff, and then that's a whole different conversation. And that's a good problem to have. We will gladly manage our way through that situation if that's the case. But then you've got kind of that middle ground, like I said, 8-4, and you beat one of your rivals just to kind of get over that hump. But to the bottom portion of Eric's text, what if Jackson Arnold's just okay? What if the offense is just okay? And what if Auburn only wins 6 or 7 games and Arnold doesn't make good decisions and the offense can't move the football and you can't score in the red zone? Saw a stat the other day, said Auburn scored like 73% of the time in the red zone, the worst in the SEC. What if it's another repeat of that? What if Arnold gets worse as a quarterback? Do we put that on Jackson Arnold or do we put that on Hugh Freeze, the quote or supposed quarterback whisperer, right? And then if you win 5 or 6 games again this year, heck, like Eric says, you may be starting back over. You may be back at square one. Jackson Arnold's not going to be here, and Deuce Knight's not going to be here. Then you don't have to worry about which one of them starts because they'll both be gone. So many different options. So many different ways that this season could go. And it all rides on the arm and the hand of Jackson Arnold at the quarterback spot. We continue talking quarterbacks when we come back from around the SEC. Overvalued, undervalued, overhyped, and underhyped. We talk about that coming up next.
You are on the line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz. Christian Griffin not in the studio today, on the road heading out of town for a little trip for the weekend, but he just couldn't stay away, folks. He couldn't do it. He had to get on the phone and talk a little quarterback situation here in Auburn and around the SEC. My man, Christian, how are you, sir? How's that drive treating you on this Thursday?
Not too bad, other than about 5 hours too long. But we are just about there and ready to get out of this seat and stretch the legs a little bit.
There you go. Well, I've been talking, on the show, the leash on Jackson Arnold and whether that exists, whether he should just have full control, full reins, no pressure of being replaced in things, and I feel we'll get to that portion of this conversation in just a little bit. But wanted to talk about this idea of overhyped and underhyped quarterbacks in the SEC going into the 2025 season, because we're in full talking season and we're going to be at SEC Media Days coming up in just a couple of weeks in Atlanta, and we're going to hear so much about which quarterbacks could have the best seasons and which ones could have maybe a good season but aren't being talked about enough, and we'll probably have the chance to talk to several quarterbacks when we're there at SEC Media Days. And so I throw this question to you, my friend, of who do you think are some of the more overhyped quarterbacks in the SEC going into the year 2025?
Well, Jacob, it's a great question. First, if we're on the topic of quarterbacks, literally as you were bringing up the conversation, go check out Mr. Hayes Fawcett's X, formerly known as Twitter account, because Auburn just picked up a 4-star quarterback who flipped from Penn State to Auburn,
yep,
as we are speaking right now. And so I'm sure that'll definitely be something you're talking about here in just a little bit. It brings up kind of wonders about Landon Duckworth, everything like that. But man, overhyped in the SEC, I feel like both of us immediately go to, and I don't know if it's necessarily him, I don't know if it's the situation, I don't know if it's the coach, but Nussmeier at LSU. I feel like that is the first one that comes to mind, and I feel like that's just because there's so much expectation. He came back for his senior year with the expectancy of being the number one overall pick. Brian Kelly, you feel like it's playoff or bust in Baton Rouge, and so if neither of those come to fruition, you feel like then ultimately it's you're set up to fail. It's almost the Auburn of college basketball right now, where we've had, even if you still have a great season because of what you've already done and because of what you did last year, it feels like you're taking a little bit of a step back. Garrett Nussmeier could easily be that first option at LSU.
Yeah, I look at him and I think I'm in the same boat of this idea that I think he's good, not great. And I just don't see yet whether they, and they may prove me wrong on the field coming up in just a few months, but with Nussmeier at LSU, again, I think he's good, not great. And I don't understand where all of this make or break stuff is coming from out of Baton Rouge. I mean, it seems like if they don't make it to the playoff this year, they're just going to fire Brian Kelly, and they feel like bringing Garrett Nussmeier back is just going to solve everything. And I don't think I'm ready to take that leap yet, Christian.
Yeah, I mean, when you're looking at their high school class and obviously what they did in the transfer portal, I mean, reload was a very easy step from last year to this upcoming year. And so obviously that adds a little bit more pressure, and then with being on the verge this past season. But yeah, with Brian Kelly at the helm, after saying that he didn't have what it took to win a national championship or even go to a national championship at Notre Dame, and then you see Marcus Freeman come in and fill those shoes rather nicely with the runner-up performance last year, and LSU has kind of just fallen into the shadows of going 8-4, 9-3 over the past couple of years. You feel like it adds a little bit of pressure, but man, you feel like with so many of these other teams, what a great problem it is to be able to have the conversation of, if we don't make it to the playoff or if we don't get a first round bye in the playoff, this season could be a little bit unhinged.
And there's a guy that I know you're a big fan of. We've talked about several times on the show, the man who's going to be running it in Columbia, South Carolina, in Lenoris Sellers. I don't think it's fair, though, to throw him in the overhyped conversation, but he's not underhyped either. I think just hyped up is the way you would describe what Lenoris Sellers could be at South Carolina this season.
Yeah, and I feel like the schedule, at least early on, I think you're going to hear his name a lot. Again, we've predicted it. I've predicted it that South Carolina is going to be 5-0 going into Baton Rouge. So funny that that could be one of those big-time games that ravels the story one way or the other with Lenoris Sellers or with Garrett Nussmeier, that game in Baton Rouge. But I think South Carolina and Shane Beamer start 5-0. And again, yeah, not willing to say that he's overhyped, because I still feel like not too many people have paid too much attention, because it is that South Carolina brand that's still very much on the come up, on the rise right now, rather than being one of those national faces of college football. That being said, you start 5-0, you start maybe 6-0 with a win at LSU, then all of a sudden you get to that point. I mean, Williams-Brice Stadium, we've talked about it, is one of the best atmospheres in the SEC, especially for a night game. And so you all of a sudden put a really good record together with a really good coach and a really good quarterback. Not willing to say that he's overhyped, and I agree, not willing to say he's underhyped as well.
Where would you put Arch Manning in this conversation? I feel like it's almost inevitable to say he's overhyped until we see what he's actually able to do as the starter at Texas. I mean, he's been there for several years, going through now his third spring at Texas, so in that system under Steve Sarkisian. But is it okay that he's overhyped? The fact that, yeah, I mean, the talent is there, the name, of course, is there, and I think the expectations and the possibilities are there, but, man, we don't know what he's going to do in big-time moments as the starter at Texas. Is it fair to say that he's overhyped?
I feel like it has to be, simply from the standpoint of who he ran out of town in Quinn Ewers, who, again, had multi-million-dollar deals to go elsewhere, decided to keep the legacy name and pursue the NFL. Now with the Dolphins, but got picked in the later stages of the late sixth or seventh round, I believe. And so you feel like the name carries that much weight, and you feel like because of who Texas essentially said, nah, thanks for everything you did or you've done, Quinn, but it's time to pass the torch. We're going to Arch Manning. And a couple of times that you were able to see him, Georgia was the big game that comes to mind, didn't necessarily look too convincing at the quarterback spot. And so you feel like overhyped is definitely the right spot to put him in. Overhyped with arguably the biggest question mark following that word in the entire SEC, because, yeah, you haven't seen him carry the week-by-week management or the week-by-week preparation to go in and attack these defenses. And you just really, really hope if you are a Texas fan, you're not sitting there at week four, week five, or even week two with Michigan going, man, what did we do with Quinn Ewers?
We're talking overhyped, underhyped quarterbacks in the SEC starting the year 2025. I'm Jacob Goetz, my co-host Christian Griffin on the road, but he's with us on the phone lines here during the Thursday edition of On the Line. If you had to throw out one who's underhyped, underrated, not getting enough love, I feel I have to go with Marcel Reed at Texas A&M. I mean, you're talking about somebody who could be very good, but also just I don't feel like is getting all the love that he deserves. We've done our quarterback rankings, and I've seen so many more across the internet in the last several weeks. I mean, you're talking about a guy that most people don't have inside the top half, but the potential is through the absolute roof, Christian.
Yeah, I think you had him right around the 10 spot, I believe, and I had him right around 6 or 7 just because There's so much there, and so many people forget that he was a freshman at Texas A&M this past year, and it took the Aggie offense 7 or 8 games, and Mike Elko would be the first one to tell you that it took them about that long to figure out their offensive identity, to figure out who Marcel Reed was under center, or in the shotgun, I should say, but taking the snaps night in and night out, and again, doing a little bit of research. It's a lot on him, but it's a lot on everything else that's around him. Obviously, this defense for Texas A&M is planning on being a lot better. Mike Elko is going to have much more control on the defensive side of the football. They're also bringing back all 5 starting offensive linemen from this past year, which regardless of where they ranked, we've seen that before of where the hype was there, but it's all of a sudden you're able to get that extra year for everybody, and you can't help but jail just because you're spending so much time. You're also bringing back 3 running backs with Le'Veon Moss leading the way, and obviously the Texas A&M transfer portal on the receiver side of things is top notch. And so there could be a little bit of pressure on Marcel Reed, but I feel like he's definitely somebody that could go in that underhyped, I almost said underwhelming, but underhyped record just because it could look at the record and he wouldn't have to be the hero. He's not having to play that Superman role in College Station for that team to have a whole lot of success.
You look at what Texas A&M is going to have on their football schedule this year. It's one of the more awkward looking schedules in the SEC this season. They open up with UTSA and then Utah State before they make a trip in week 3. Christian, do you remember where they go?
I do not.
They go to Notre Dame on September 13th, a night game on a Saturday night. Texas A&M going to play the Irish in Notre Dame, 6:30. That's going to be on NBC, national TV on Saturday, September 13th. Before then, they rip off 3 straight home games with Auburn, Mississippi State. Florida comes to town before they flip it right back around and go 3 straight games on the road at Arkansas, LSU, and Missouri. They get a big game against South Carolina at home, their non-con game against Samford before the end of the season on Black Friday in Austin, taking on the Longhorns.
Man, you were just making sure I didn't have my notes out there, so you knew that I wasn't cheating and making sure that we're not sitting there talking about all the same names about underhyped and overhyped.
Look,
and
I know your girlfriend's driving, so you could read your notes and write some stuff down and be prepared for the call. I understand.
It's fair, yeah. I was very much in preparation, and it was just a trick to let you know that I wasn't sure who A&M was playing week 3. But it's crazy just sitting here thinking about how many storylines can come from this conversation of underhyped versus overhyped in the first half of the season, right? I mean, imagine Texas A&M goes to Notre Dame. They go to South Bend, and they pick up a big-time win. Then they come home, and they beat Auburn. You know, how much does that flip the tide with Jackson Arnold in a conversation that you were having earlier about the leash versus Marcel Reed? Or imagine Lenora Sellers and Garrett Nussmeier early in the season when they play each other. I mean, so many of these early season SEC games are going to determine so much before you hit that, again, that really tough stretch when you're trying to go on the road and win some of these big-time games, because at that point, later in the season, you feel like there's no more question marks. It's all about the execution.
Well, you bring up Jackson Arnold, and that's the guy I talked about for quite some time. And we are going to talk the breaking news of Auburn picking up a quarterback commit in the class of 2026. We'll probably start hour number two with that. It fits perfectly into what I was talking about with what the future could look like. We had somebody text in and talk about that a little bit, depending on the performance of Jackson Arnold this year. If he goes pro, if he comes back, does Deuce Knight stay? Does Deuce Knight go? Heck, Ashton Daniels could stay for that quarterback room. And now, in addition, a flip from Penn State. More on that in just a little bit. But where does Jackson Arnold fit in this conversation, Christian, of overhyped and underhyped? Because I weirdly think he's kind of just hanging out in the middle and people are in wait to see it mode. But then you start looking outside of Auburn fans and there's a lot of high expectations for Auburn this year. 8, 9, 10 plus wins.
Well, first off, I'm a little upset thinking that you didn't think I was paying attention to the first 30 minutes. I mean, I heard the text from Eric in Auburn, and he brought up great text or a great conversation about everything, and I completely agree. It brings up a very similar conversation to Quinn Ewers and Arch Manning, right? I mean, is it already the conversation of it's going to be Deuce Knight in 2026, or is it the conversation of if Jackson Arnold comes back and Auburn goes 9-3, 10-2, but NIL and now the revenue sharing is able to keep him in? Auburn should not shy away from anything like that. You shouldn't shy away from one quarterback's success for the fear of another one running off. If that's the case, then Deuce Knight wasn't supposed to be the guy in 2026, and then you can go from there. But you mentioned it. I mean, what great problems that would be if Auburn goes 9-3, 10-2 with Jackson Arnold, and there's possibly a conversation of him coming back. All of a sudden, if he does have that great year and can work his way into the top quarterbacks in the SEC or the country, then yes, then you fully expect to make that transition. But no, I'm kind of right there with you of everybody knows what he has and had in high school, again, being the five-star Gatorade player of the year. I mean, you have every single one of the recognitions and the stars that you could possibly ask for. In the last 2 years at OU, still so many question marks with the receiver room being banged up, having a negative offensive line that felt like he had to be Bo Nix 3.0 every single time he took a shotgun snap. And unless he was able to run for 150 yards a game, then you weren't able to have very much success. Now, all of a sudden, you're bringing him into one of the more talented on paper rosters in the SEC on the offensive side of the football. And kind of like a similar situation with Marcel Reed of he doesn't have to be that Superman quarterback that comes in and does every single thing right for Auburn to have any sort of success, right? I mean, you hand the ball off to your three-headed running back room or four-headed running back room, and then you get the ball out to Cam Coleman. You throw it deep to Perry Thompson. You throw it in the slot with a little much more easier. We had so much of a conversation about Peyton Thorne, and if we were able to get a B on the teacher grading scale last year, Auburn wins 8 games. You get a B plus or an A minus, then you get into the conversation of what we're hoping for this year of taking care of business early, doing what you can, surviving the early part of the season, handling and taking care of business like you should in the middle part, and then see where you end up in November being in that conversation. And you don't feel like too many of those conversations change when it comes to Jackson Arnold.
My man Christian Griffin, co-host with me, he is on the road, but on the phone as well. We need to take a break, pay some bills, come back. Are you going to talk a little bit of basketball with some changes coming to what the schedule looks like moving forward in college basketball? You good for one more segment, my friend?
Let's do it.
Beautiful. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back, wrap up hour number one after this. Again, more quarterback conversation coming to start hour number two as Auburn makes a huge flip in the quarterback spot in the class of 2026, a flip from Penn State to Auburn. A four-star quarterback, Peyton Falzone, has committed to play for Auburn. We'll have that coming up for you at the 3 o'clock hour, but we'll take our break, come back, and wrap it up in hour number one after this.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. This is the Thursday edition of On the Line. I'm Jacob Goins, my co-host Christian Griffin on the road but on the phone. We got about 2 minutes, my friend, and I know you saw it. We're going to talk some about it later on with Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC as well. But the NCAA has approved the idea and now will be put into action beginning in the 2026 college basketball season that the regular season schedule will go from 31 games per year to 32 games per year. And that may not sound like an overly drastic deal or a drastic change, but they said the idea is to allow teams or encourage teams to schedule another tough non-conference opponent. Your thoughts on that and maybe what Auburn could do moving forward with the extra game on the schedule?
I mean, I feel like Auburn doesn't necessarily need to do anything. They should give it a thumbs up and say, look at what we've done the past couple of years. Look what we're about to do.
Yep.
I think this rule applies to just about everybody, but I mean, or everybody except Auburn. But, man, 31 from 32 is, okay, great, awesome, sounds good. They're just making way for that moving up to 55 games once the tournament gets expanded to 168 teams.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, Auburn and Alabama, too, are in that category of not really needing to be pushed to schedule tough opponents. But I think a lot of teams in the Big Ten or the ACC or the Big 12, I mean, I think this is one of those things that's like, hey, go schedule some more teams. Go join another tournament in the season somewhere before you get into conference play. And so it's a change, yes, but I don't think it's one that is overly crazy. And so we will see what Auburn decides to do. Of course, big-name teams on the schedule this year with Purdue and Arizona and things like that. And so, Christian, we appreciate you, my man. Safe travels. I know you guys are almost there. Enjoy your weekend. We appreciate you calling in and checking in, my friend.
Yeah, of course. And I know you do it with all your guests, so I have to feel special real fast. I'm going to go ahead and plug everything I got here. Monday through Friday, 2 to 4 right here on ESPN 106.7. Join Jacob and I and give him a hard time for the rest of the weekend.
There you go. Appreciate you, my man. Have a great trip, all right?
Yeah, man. Sounds good.
Christian Griffin, my co-host, on the road, taking a little vacation, but calling in and joining us for just a little bit. And so that's pretty much it for hour number one. But breaking news coming up in hour number two as Auburn picks up a quarterback commit in the class of 2026, Peyton Falzone, a four-star quarterback, 6'5", 200 pounds. He has flipped from Penn State to Auburn. We'll talk about him, how it impacts the recruiting class, and honestly, how it impacts the conversation we were just having earlier about what the future of the quarterback room could look like. We're talking breaking news for Auburn football recruiting when we come back to start hour number two, and Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC as well. Stick around. Don't you dare turn that radio dial.
Production. You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. If you missed any of hour number one, you can go back and catch it with the podcast. You'll find it on our station website at ESPNAU.com. I know many of you listen to the show live there each and every day, so you can find it right there in the podcast center, also on that Radio Alabama app as well. In hour number one, we talked a lot of Auburn Auburn quarterback situation. And funny enough, we get to talk some more about that here in hour number two. But talked about the idea of Jackson Arnold and whether there is a leash on him, kind of what the expectations are, if there should be a moment in the season or maybe a point in the season that we should expect a change of leadership there at the quarterback spot with Deuce Knight. So a lot of that conversation in hour number one. My co-host Christian Griffin is not in studio today, but he did call in for a little bit. We talked about overhyped and underhyped quarterbacks in the SEC going into the year 2025, going into this upcoming season, of course, and had some fun talking about that as well. So all of that was in the first 60 minutes. If you missed it, check out the podcast version of the show on our station website at ESPNAU.com. And here in hour number two, we're going to talk even more quarterback news because Auburn breaks news or out of nowhere, man, just breaking news from Hayes Fawcett as Hugh Freeze and the Tigers land a quarterback commit in the class of 2026. They flip a four-star from Penn State to Auburn. We'll talk about him, why it's important, and what it could mean for the quarterback room as a whole. We'll talk about that here in hour number two. Maybe go a little bit deeper into the college basketball changes coming to the schedule for next season, Jani Broome's draft update as well, and then we're going to talk to Chris Gordy of the Locked On SEC podcast. So all of that's coming here in hour number two, but before we get into content, we want to remind you that hour number two, each and every day here during On the Line on ESPN, is brought to you by our friends at the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. So we appreciate them sponsoring the second hour of our show each and every day here on ESPN. The phone lines are open. I know you got thoughts. I know you've got feelings as Auburn breaks the internet, it seems like, with the fact that they flip a quarterback from Penn State. I want to hear from you. Give me your thoughts on this, the fact that the recruiting class with the one that has been falling apart literally by the seams is now has a quarterback added to it. I want to hear from you. Give me a call. 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. You can also shoot me a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. And your thoughts on the breaking news for Auburn football out of absolutely nowhere. Hugh Freeze does it again. Picks up a big-time quarterback commit in the class of 2026, and his name is Peyton Falzone. No, not Peyton Thorne. Don't wreck your car. Don't get a little twitch. It's okay. It's Peyton Falzone. He's from Nazareth, Pennsylvania. He's a four-star quarterback in the class of 2026. Stands at nearly 6'5", 200 pounds, and he is now going to be an Auburn Tiger. He's considered the 11th ranked quarterback in the country, according to 247 Sports. He's considered the fourth best player in the state of Pennsylvania. He has been committed to Penn State for quite some time, and he has now flipped his verbal commitment from Penn State to the Auburn Tigers. And for obvious reasons, this is a big deal. This is a really, really big deal. This helps in so many ways for what Auburn is trying to do for the future of this program. Again, he's in the class of 2026, so obviously will not be here this year. This is what the quarterback room could look like moving into next year. And we were talking about what that could look like next year with the current quarterbacks on the roster because we had Eric and Auburn text in and say, well, what happens if Jackson Arnold is good, not great, or mediocre this year, comes back for another season? What happens to Deuce Knight? Also, you got to think about what happens to Ashton Daniels, who could absolutely come back for another year. Remember the Stanford transfer who's on this team as well. This complicates that, but it's a good complication. This is a good problem to have. And this sort of quiets the negative noise that's been happening around Auburn football recruiting, does it not? Does this at least make you feel a little bit better if you're an Auburn fan? Are you at least you should be excited about this? At bare minimum, you should be excited about Peyton Falzone, who is your new future quarterback in the class of 2026. And it's funny because we've been having some conversations about, well, Would Auburn go and get a quarterback in 2026? And then you had the whole Landon Duckworth situation about what that could look like, right? A kid that Auburn had been going after for quite some time, a kid who's in the class of 2026 as well, someone who you feel was down to, and really is down to, Auburn and South Carolina, right? And you felt that that was just not going to happen for Auburn anymore. And now you go, and all of a sudden, you find this dude who has been committed to Penn State for a little bit and flips his verbal commitment from Penn State to Auburn. And there's a couple of other teams that have been in the mixture here. He took visits to Utah and also to Iowa, but he flips his commitment today to play for the Auburn Tigers. But it does add to what could be some confusion or maybe a different C word. It's kind of an old saying. It's kind of one that scares people nowadays. Adds to the competition that you could have in this quarterback room for Auburn in 2026. And I realize we have our own problems in 2025 to worry about in terms of winning games on the field and what we think Jackson Arnold's going to be and if Deuce Knight sees the field, all of that. And if you want more on that side of things, go back and listen to hour number one on the podcast. This is purely talking about what next year and beyond could look like, because I said it in the first hour, and we've said it several times. You feel like you recruited Deuce Knight to be the man. You feel like you recruited a guy like Deuce Knight to take the reins as a sophomore, not a junior. But here you are, right? Because what if Jackson Arnold comes back for another season? What if this Peyton Falzone kid comes in and is the real deal? I mean, you're starting to build a little bit of a pipeline here of what the next several years could look like for Auburn at the quarterback spot. And just to tell you a little bit about what Falzone has done in his high school days before we continue talking and going down that road. Again, 6 foot, almost 6'5". He is 200 pounds, the number 11 ranked quarterback in the class of 2026 in 2 years in Pennsylvania high school football. He has accumulated 4,600 yards, 42 passing touchdowns to just 8 interceptions, again, across 2 years. These stats are from our friend Christian Clemente at Auburn 247. 4,600 yards, 42 touchdowns to just 8 interceptions with a 57% completion percentage. He also is a runner as well. He's added 1,100 yards on the ground and 19 touchdowns with his legs. This is something that you bring in hoping he is the future down the road. I look at this as what your quarterback room pecking order looks like, right? You have Jackson Arnold now. You brought in Deuce Knight for him to be the future, and now you've got Peyton Falzone. I'll be completely honest. I don't know where Ashton Daniels fits in this category or in this conversation. I fear with the idea of picking up Peyton Falzone, the flip from Penn State to Auburn as a four-star quarterback, that tells me that Ashton Daniels probably isn't going to be it. It probably means he's not going to be really a part of this equation down the road. And that's okay. I don't think many people were expecting that, right? I don't think there were many people that looked at this and said, man, I really think Ashton Daniels could be it a year from now or 2 years from now. And maybe you did or maybe you didn't. But I guess the logical train of thought would be Jackson Arnold this year, Deuce Knight next year, maybe Deuce Knight the year after that, and then this kid could step in, Peyton Falzone, because that would give you what? Arnold would be gone if he were to go pro this year, whatever the case may be. That would give you Deuce Knight to start as a sophomore and a junior. That would allow Falzone to be sitting behind him as a freshman and start as a sophomore. So basically the same idea that what you've been doing with Deuce Knight. And it's a crazy idea because of the era that we're in college football, where some teams say, yeah, we want to go find one dude and hope that he starts for 3 or 4 years, a.k.a. Garrett Nussmeier at LSU. Some places say, well, we'll just take whatever we can get. We'll go find a new quarterback every year if that's what it takes. Look at what several programs around the country have done. And then there's kind of this middle ground where I believe there's no cookie cutter way. There's no one right way to do it in any given year. I just don't think there's a mindset where you just say, yeah, we're taking a quarterback every other class. We're going to take one this year, and then, yeah, we'll wait, and then we'll take one the following year. And I understand the idea of judging it based off the recruiting class, right, and the talent in that class. Absolutely get that. Totally understand. You see that happen in the professional drafts as well. It's like, well, we could take a quarterback this year, but we're going to wait till next year where there's a really good one, right? I get that idea. But we were having those conversations of, well, maybe Auburn won't take a quarterback in 2026. And then you start looking around at Landon Duckworth. All of a sudden, you hop in that conversation. You're in it, and then you're not. And then here, out of the blue, you flip a four-star quarterback from Penn State to Auburn, and now you're starting to talk about some serious longevity at the quarterback spot. But it all goes back to a question that was proposed to us in the first hour, is what happens if Jackson Arnold has a bad year this year? And what if it's not his fault? You can get good recruits all you want. You can pick up the Deuce Knights and Peyton Falzones all you want. But if you're Hugh Freeze and Ken Austin and this staff, you better find a way to develop these guys. You better find a way to change the narrative about Auburn football and quarterbacks. It's oil and water right now, folks. Auburn and quarterbacks do not mesh. They do not blend. This smoothie tastes terrible. They don't belong. There are two ingredients that just don't taste right together right now. They just don't. So you have to find a way to change that. And maybe taking that next step up in terms of talent, maybe that's what it takes. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know. Because I'm willing to bet that Jackson Arnold, Deuce Knight, and this kid Peyton Falzone are more talented than what you've had over the past couple of years at Auburn in terms of quarterback talent in that room. Is that fair to say? Is that safe to say? I think so. I would like to think so. I mean, the last guy who was as talented as what you're looking at, I think, is Bo Nix, right? Clearly, we saw what his potential was. But talent can only get you so far. Notice how all this comes back to the same root point. Coaching has to be better. Development has to be better. Production has to be better. Have you noticed that? Have you noticed how all this, any sort of conversation about Auburn, comes back to one root point? Coaching has to be better. But this is exciting. This is a big deal. This could very well save the recruiting class in 2026 before the season starts. This is very positive momentum, okay? This is very positive momentum. Because you look at it now where Auburn stands in the 2026 recruiting rankings, it's still not good. It's still nowhere near where it needs to be. But you look at Auburn with the addition of a four-star quarterback, and Auburn right now sits at 77th in the recruiting rankings on 247. That is with the addition of Peyton Falzone. You are still 77th in the country with seven commits, including Ezekiel Harris, Peyton Falzone, Denarius Gray, Nikau Heppe, the offensive tackle we talked about yesterday from New Zealand, who's 6'7", 370 pounds, Parker Pritchett, Wayne Henry, and Eric Perry. That's what you have right now. But this is a good start. And the fact that you are still able to sell the product that you're selling, right? You're still able to get people to bite and buy on what you're selling, a.k.a. Hugh Freeze and the future of this program, to a kid like Peyton Falzone is a big deal. And I say that hoping to not come off in a way that it's, what's the word I'm looking for? You're not sleazing them, right? You're not fooling them. I'm not saying that you're convincing them and tricking them, but you do have to get results at the end of the day. And I'm excited to start watching some film on Peyton Falzone and really break this down. But this has all happened in the last 45 minutes. that Auburn has flipped a quarterback from Penn State to Auburn. It's another Nittany Lion, or I guess a future Nittany Lion, that is now going to be a future Auburn Tiger. Four-star quarterback Peyton Falzone, ranked 11th in the class of 2026 in terms of quarterbacks. He flips his commitment today from Penn State to Auburn, 6'5", 200 pounds, and he's going to join what has quickly become a very stacked quarterback room here on the Plains. Give me a call. What are your thoughts? Auburn picks up a recruit. You pick up a commit added to the class, and it's a quarterback. Everybody loves talking about them, right? I want to hear your thoughts on this and more. 334-321-1390. That's the phone line number. Give me a call and tell me what you think about all of this. 334-321-1390. Or you could shoot me a text in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. We'll take our first break here in hour number two on the Thursday edition of On the Line.
War Eagle, this is Auburn baseball coach Butch Thompson, and you're on the line with Jacob Goins and Auburn Opelika sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
All right, we're back here on the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, flying solo in the studio today, just like old times, right? That's a flash to the way past here on the show today. And so I appreciate you being along for the ride on what is a overcast, little cooler bit day here in the Auburn Opelika area. As phone lines are open, give me a call, 334-321-1390. Auburn football, out of the blue, out of nowhere, flips a four-star quarterback commit from Penn State to Auburn. Peyton Falzone talked a lot about him and kind of what this could be for the future of Auburn football, so definitely want to hear your thoughts on that. 334-321-1390. Text box is open as well, 334-784-1067. And you also have the NBA draft day two coming up tonight, as day one was last night. Hopefully you were able to tune in and catch some of that here on ESPN 106.7 and ESPNAU.com. And we're going to have day two for you here on ESPN. That'll begin at 6:30. So we'll wrap up at 4. The drive will be from 4 to 6, and then you can catch the NBA draft if you're out driving around this evening or at home or whatever, right on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com. 6:30 is when coverage starts of day two of the NBA draft. And this day is more important, I think, for Auburn fans in particular, because we are waiting to see where Jahni Broome gets drafted, where he's going to go, and what number that he's going to be taken. He did not end up creeping into the first round. That was a long shot, I think, for that to actually happen. And the middle of the second round has pretty much been where they've projected him to go all along. Anywhere from 40 to 45 is basically what we saw going in to day one of the NBA draft. And there were a lot of movements and a lot of noise last night in day one of the NBA draft. But when you look at it now, updated mock drafts for Jahni Broome, I've seen several different ones, and saw one on Sports Illustrated that had him going 45th to the Clippers or something like that, or maybe that was a little bit further down. I see this one right here on 3 has him going 41st to the Golden State Warriors, which I don't think would be all that hateful for a guy like Jahni Broome. And so some of the names that are still out there. These are updated. This on 3 article says updated as of 11:30 on June 26th. So that is today, because, dude, there's so many trades and stuff going on. It's wild to keep up with, and nearly impossible to actually keep up with it. But some familiar names that are still out there to hear their name called: Tyrese Proctor from Duke, Adut Thiero from Arkansas, Chaz Lanier from Tennessee, kind of questioning what his role would be on an NBA team. I mean, probably play at a 3 maybe, and maybe be a D3 type of guy. So he's still out there. Of course, Jahni Broome from Auburn, Elijah Martin from Florida is still out there. Tamar Bates from Missouri is still waiting to hear his name called. Some other ones on this list: Kobe Brea is projected, according to On3, to go to the Utah Jazz. One of the best shooters, I think, in the country when he's on. Vlad Goldin the Michigan big man, projected to go to Memphis, according to this. Amari Williams, the big man from Kentucky, is still out there as well. And so big names were taken last night, but a lot of them don't or have not seen or heard their names picked just yet. We'll talk to Chris Gordy from Locked On SEC coming up at the bottom of the hour, get some of his early thoughts on SEC guys that went in the NBA draft. But just got a text in the on-the-line text box, 334-784-1067, and it's in reference to Auburn flipping quarterback Peyton Falzone from Penn State to Auburn. And I alluded to this, and I believe there might be a little PTSD going around the Auburn fan base right now, because this person says, unless it's Peyton Manning, I don't want another Peyton at quarterback at Auburn. I mean, that is... That seems to be some of the early feelings around the fan base. Believe this is Billy down in Beauregard, says, if it's not Peyton Manning, I don't want another Peyton at quarterback. And look, I get it. I do. It is kind of funny, though. You do have to admit it is kind of comical that Auburn fans suffered through what was Peyton Thorne and how it could have been better and kind of just got worse as it went along. And now there's going to be another Peyton in the quarterback room. And I think fans may just be convinced that that name is cursed here as a quarterback on the Plains. But in all seriousness, I do think that Peyton Falzone is really, really talented. I think his stats show that. I mentioned excited to dive into some of his film and see what exactly that he is going to bring. But just from a very early point of outside looking in here, I don't see this as a work in progress or a developmental piece or anything like that. I see this as someone that Auburn and Hugh Freeze believe could be the future down the road. And I say down the road as in several years from now, because I kind of broke down the timeline a little bit. I mean, if everything goes according to plan, you would want Jackson Arnold this year, Deuce Knight the next 2 years, and then probably this kid, Peyton Falzone, the year after that, in the same sort of situation that Deuce Knight is in. Come in as a star freshman, have a lot of hype. He's not to the level of Deuce Knight, I don't think, but in terms of hype, I'm not sure on potential just yet, but in terms of their hype, right? Come in, sit behind a starting quarterback, learn the system, low pressure, not a whole lot of expectations, and then when his reign is done, then you take over. I think that's kind of what you would want to see from a guy like Peyton Falzone, and so we will have to see. Somebody texted in, Eric. This is funny. This actually made me laugh. Eric says, we do seem to get quite a few flips from your favorite coach, James Franklin. Isn't that funny how that works? Isn't that funny how Auburn just goes and gets good players from my favorite coach in the business, James Franklin, who I think of as nothing but a winner, who is so successful, and I would love for him to come and be the next coach at Auburn if he were to get fired from Penn State for whatever reason, I don't know, not winning football games. Funny how that works out, right? But yes, a Penn State flip, Peyton Falzone, a four-star quarterback in the class of 2026. He's no longer a future Nittany Lion. He is now a future Tiger. And I think Auburn fans should be fired up about this one. Seems like the quarterback room just added a pretty good future star. All right, bottom of the hour break is coming up. When we come back, Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC will join us on the phone lines. We have a lot to talk about with him. Wrapping up baseball, NBA draft, spring and summer storylines across the country and college football. We talk to Chris Gordy coming up next.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, my co-host Christian Griffin, out of town today and tomorrow. So a flash from the past, Mr. Chris Gordy, it's you and me on the radio on a Thursday afternoon. It's been this way for a long time, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, man. And it's crazy. We're already almost into July here, and Well, it'll be football season there before we know it.
Yeah, we'll be over in Atlanta coming up in just a couple of weeks for SEC Media Days, a week full of coaches and players and talent interviews, and excited to hear why Auburn's going to make it to the playoff, why Texas is back, and why the reign of Alabama's over, right?
Yeah, and why the SEC is dead, and why we can't win championships in we can win championships in everything except football, I guess.
Yeah, well, I'm sure we'll hear a ton about that coming up in the next couple of weeks. But a sport that the SEC can win national championships in is baseball. And I don't believe we've had the chance to talk to you since it went final that LSU is the national champions in college baseball this year in 2025. Your takeaways on what they did against Coastal night one in the dominant fashion we saw there from Cade Anderson, and then in game two where LSU just kind of pulled away after a lot of theatrics in that one.
Yeah, it was interesting. I talked to some people that were, you know, that were covering the team and there and saw them, and you know, kind of the attitude of the team going into the College World Series Finals, and they kind of said, you know, like this team's attitude was, Coastal doesn't have anything we haven't seen before. You know, I thought that was an interesting perspective to take. Like, okay, yeah, they got some really good arms, like Jacob Morrison. They got some really good bats, but you know, playing the SEC all year, like. I'm sorry, Liam Doyle's better. You know, there's other guys that they played throughout the season in the SEC that had them more battle-tested. And so LSU went to that series, and they weren't afraid of Coastal. Everybody kept talking about this 26-game win streak and all this. But, you know, Cade Anderson and Anthony Eisen had just – they had elevated themselves as two of the best pitchers in all of baseball all year. And – you know, it's hard to hold people to the standard of what Paul Skeens was 2 years ago for LSU because, you know, he was, you know, possibly one of the greatest pitchers we've ever seen come through college and, you know, obviously go to MLB and doing what he's doing now for the Pirates. But, you know, Cade Anderson was every bit as good. I mean, he was outstanding. And to get a 9-game, complete game shutout from him was pretty outstanding. And so, yeah, as soon as they won game one, you kind of had the feeling LSU is going to get this done in game two with the way Einstein had been pitching it. So, yeah, man, it was well-earned. How we've been kind of saying it is, you know, this wasn't LSU's most talented team they've ever had, but, man, they showed up big when they needed to. You know, just the pitching performances and then, you know, timely hitting when they needed it, it was well-earned. So, yeah, now it's 6 straight years of the SEC winning a national championship in baseball, and we'll see if Auburn can get over that hump soon.
Thank you. We appreciate that. That was a very nice touch there at the end, Chris. We were waiting for that early in the call this week. I'm impressed. And so
how about this, Jacob? LSU got revenge for Auburn.
We feel so much better that LSU won the national title than Coastal Carolina, a team that Auburn swept, by the way. Just want to keep that in mind for folks who forgot about that. But when you do look at this, the college baseball landscape for the SEC as a whole, moving in to next year, of course, a lot of time between now and then. I mean, do you expect the dominance to continue across the board for the SEC top to bottom, or do you maybe see a team or two kind of slipping away in the SEC not being as good next year?
Well, no. I mean, look at Mississippi State going and hiring Brian O'Connor from Virginia. I mean, he's one of the greatest to do it in the last 20 years. And I think him coming to Starkville, he's already bringing the kids that have already gone, you know, coming out of the portal or coming to Virginia or from Virginia to Mississippi State. And then the rest of the teams, SEC teams in the portal. I saw Tennessee's adding a couple of big arms. You know, they're all making moves right now. And so it's, the SEC is going to be just as strong again in baseball next year, if not even more parity, because it's just, you know, it's, you got that front, you have a front end at ace that you can trust. You have the good foundation of competing in the SEC. And so, yeah, this is going to be really, really interesting to see what happens next year. LSU's got to replace their big arms, but, I got a feeling they'll be right back in the mix too. So, yeah, no, there's no slowing down here. It's going to be really interesting to track that baseball transfer portal over the next week or two.
We're talking with Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, our longtime Thursday guest here on the Line on ESPN 106.7. As we move right along through the sports here on the show today with the NBA draft, day one is complete last night. Day two is coming up tonight, which can be heard here locally on ESPN 106.7 and ESPNAU.com. Several SEC guys heard their name called last night, including several in the top 10, Chris. We saw Trey Johnson from Texas go 6 overall, Jeremiah Fears go 7 overall, and Colin Murray-Boyles went 9th overall to the Raptors. Any surprises on SEC guys that got drafted last night?
No, I think that was most of that was as expected. I really enjoyed watching Trey Johnson this year in Texas. It's a shame, man. I mean, I wish, you know, there was some way to go back and rewrite history where we could get 3 years of college ball out of guys like this, because it would just be amazing to watch how they would develop and flourish and how much greater it would make the college game. I had a few people comment on the draft last night saying, I don't even know who some of these people are. Like, it's so hard to, like, get fully wrapped up and invested in the draft these days. But, seeing Clayton go from Florida, I thought, you know, that's a guy that just made himself a lot of money throughout the postseason. Hitting clutch shots every round for Florida and, you know, leading them to a national championship. So you felt good for Walter Clayton. But, yeah, I mean, you should have some more names go tonight. Obviously, some of the Alabama guys expected to go. And, of course, you know, we'll see where our Auburn guy goes in Jedi Broom. I'd expect him to hear his name called tonight.
Yeah, I was reading through some of the names earlier before we got you on. SEC guys who have yet to be drafted: Adu Thierro from Arkansas, Chaz Lanier from Tennessee, Jahni Broome from Auburn, as you mentioned, Elijah Martin from Florida. You look at it, Kobe Brea from Kentucky, Amari Williams from Kentucky as well. I mean, there's a lot of SEC guys who could see their name called tonight. And then for those that don't, I feel that you'll see a lot of them find their way on a team somehow. Don't you think, Chris?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. The G League has become, it's not, you know, it's a real training ground to develop guys now. I mean, there's a lot of guys in the past couple of years that have, found ways to hook on with the G League team and make a name for themselves and then finally, you know, get an opportunity to come up to the bigs and show what they can do. So, yeah, probably that road for some of the guys who don't hear their names called tonight. And honestly, for some of the guys who do hear their names called tonight, you know, I'm thinking of Mark Sears for Alabama and, you know, guys like that, probably going to be really good in the G League and, you know, get a chance to play some extended minutes and show what they can do. But I did see history was made last night. It was the first year, I think it's 17 years, that John Calipari did not have a first-round draft pick. So that run kind of comes to an end for all those years at Kentucky and all that. To have his guys at Arkansas, highly thought of, but not going in the first round last night. That was interesting that came to an end.
And this, what I'm about to say, has little to absolutely nothing to do with the SEC, but it's a crime that Rutgers had 2 top 5 draft picks on their team last year. Not only did they miss the tournament, Chris Gordy, they didn't even go 500 last year in college basketball. Dylan Harper, 2nd overall to the Spurs, and Ace Bailey, 5th overall to the Utah Jazz. 2 top 5 picks and can't go 500 in college basketball. Something ain't right up there in Jersey.
Yeah, my first thought is, who the hell is their coach? I mean, that guy must suck. But, it's reminiscent of, I remember watching that LSU team when, you know, it was all a buzz that they got the top recruit and Ben Simmons coming over from Australia, and he was going to be the next big coming, and Shaq had helped endorse, we got Ben Simmons coming. And, you know, that team didn't even make the postseason at LSU. So, yeah, it's good. You got to have good coaching. It's not just the players.
Yeah, that's true. And then, of course, the catastrophe of Ben Simmons in the NBA as well, where he'd just been bounced around and just never really got to what they were hoping he would be in the NBA. But as we roll right along, you're on your way to Louisiana. Is that right, Chris? You're heading down to Nicholls State, where the Manning Passing Academy is going to be taking place over the next several days.
It's become a yearly affair the last handful of years. Like, to get out to the Manning Passing Academy, get a very short interview window with some of the big quarterbacks that are going to be out there. Man, there's a ton of the SEC guys that are going to be there this year. Everybody from Bo Prabula at Mizzou to Lenora Sellers at South Carolina, Ty Simpson at Alabama, Taylen Green at Arkansas. I mean, there's a laundry list of guys on top of, you know, a lot of the national quarterbacks. I believe Drew Aller and Cade Klubnik, and among others. So, yeah, it's a who's who of all the big-name quarterbacks, and obviously the four-letter word Arch, he will be there and commanding a lot of attention as well. It's funny. Last year I was there, I saw Bill Belichick there, and I was wondering what Belichick was doing, and I guess he was scouting. He was little did we know at the time he was going to be a college coach a year later and coaching at North Carolina. So I did see Todd McShay tweeted out that he's going to be there. John Gruden's going to be there. So should be some interesting names. But, yeah, we'll try to grab a couple of minutes with some of the SEC guys, as many as we can grab, and we'll have that all up next week on Locked On SEC.
Is there anything in particular that you look for with these guys? I mean, and kind of what the format of all this is, and in terms of a scouting type of thing, or just trying to grab some interviews and things, what exactly are you looking for this week?
So like the first few hours, you're able to get out of the fields and watch these guys. So for those who don't know what the Manning Passion Academy is, it's a camp for kids. I mean, honestly, it's young kids that are anywhere from, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12, 13, 14 years old, kids that are getting ready for, you know, either elementary school or high school to play flag football, or even kids who are getting ready to play high school football, and they get to be coached by the best. And, you know, this has been going on for a long time. These coaches are voluntary. And, you know, with the names that are involved, from Archie Manning to Peyton to Eli, you know, Cooper, they're able to get some of the biggest names across college football to come be voluntary camp assistants. Of course, you know, the big headline was made about 13 years ago when Johnny Manziel was there and slept through his alarm and didn't show up to help out. You could kind of see the red flags there already on Manziel. But it's always a cool thing. So you get to see how these kids interact. You know, you get to see their leadership skills. You kind of get to see them interacting with groups of kids that come and go and interweave. And I remember 2 years ago seeing Drake May out there, you know, North Carolina quarterback at the time. And I was really impressed with how he was leading the kids and just kind of taking charge and then high-fiving them and that sort of thing. And so, you know, a few years later, he ends up being a top five pick in the draft. So, you know, just kind of things like that. You can kind of get an early read on, you know, how these guys operate, what their mentality is. And then, yeah, you get them for a real brief interview session right after the practice. And so, like I said, we're going to try to catch up with as many of the SEC guys as we can.
Yep, you can check all of that out on Locked On SEC, wherever you get your podcasts, and on YouTube as well. And Chris, before we let you go, we're talking quarterbacks. I'm sure you saw the breaking news today, right? Auburn saves the recruiting class. Everything is okay. A 2026 quarterback is going to be on campus and now will be in Auburn. Tiger Peyton Falzone flips from Penn State to Auburn, a four-star quarterback, top 15 quarterback in the country. Everything's fine now, right? Recruiting has been saved on the Plains.
I saw that. I just started laughing. I'm like, I mean, I guess they're just trying to load up the quarterback room as much as possible. But, you know, maybe some other spots we might want to be looking at. Maybe D-line, maybe linebacker. I mean, there's some other positions of need we could be adding. Can't have enough O-linemen. So, but, yeah, it's not been a good week or so for Hugh Freeze. As people have been telling me, it seems like he was more concerned about being on the golf course than he was about picking up recruits. So I don't know, man. We'll see what happens here. But, yeah, certainly it's been slow to get going, this 2026 class for Auburn.
Yeah, and again, Peyton Falzone, the Penn State commit, flips to Auburn today, a four-star quarterback, 6'5", 200 pounds. I mean, who needs an offensive lineman if the quarterback's talented enough, Chris? Just let him run around like crazy. It'll be fine. It'll work out. That was the Gus Malzahn mindset.
Yeah, well, maybe Deuce Knight will play left guard. Maybe that's the plan.
Oh, I mean, at this point, we may end up getting to that point as well. Chris Gardy, Locked On SEC, my man, always a pleasure talking with you and always appreciate you taking the time. Plug it all again. Tell people where they can find you and what you got coming up.
Yeah, Locked On SEC, wherever you get your podcast. Get a good episode dropping tomorrow. We caught up with Peter Burns. He was out there in Omaha and got to cover the sixth straight SEC championship. So, talked about that with Peter Burns and kind of got a little primer ahead of SEC Media Days, talking about the quarterback landscape of the SEC and a whole lot more. So Locked On SEC, wherever you get your podcasts.
We appreciate it, man. Safe travels down there to Louisiana. Looking forward to the content that you put out there from the Manning Passing Academy. We'll talk to you again. Wait, next Thursday. We will not talk to you next Thursday. We are off for the 4th of July holiday, so we'll pick back up. That would be, what, the week before SEC Media Days, I think.
Sounds good, man. We'll shoot some fireworks and come back with all 10 fingers, okay?
Yep, that sounds good, man. We appreciate it. Chris Gordy, Locked On SEC. Check it out wherever you get your podcast and check it out on YouTube as well. And as I said there, just to give you a little heads up as I pull up the calendar here, glad I remembered that as I was talking to him. No shows here on ESPN. That's the Max Roundtable, On the Line, and The Drive. We are going to be off next Thursday and Friday, so a week from today and then a week from tomorrow. That's the 3rd and the 4th. We'll be off both of those days for the 4th of July holiday. So we'll have shows tomorrow, of course. And then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, we'll take off Thursday, Friday, 3rd and 4th, and then we'll be back on that Monday the 7th. And, yeah, that's the week before SEC Media Days, folks. So we're going to be hyping that up and plugging that and excited to be going to Atlanta once again next year. And I've said this a couple of times. If you're a business that wants to be a part of that, wants to help us go out there and be a part of our week-long coverage here on ESPN 106.7, hit us up. You could shoot a quick email to info@aunetwork.com. That's info@aunetwork.com. Looking forward to going out to SEC Media Days in just a couple of weeks. We'll take our final break, come back, and wrap it all up here on the Thursday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com, or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Winding down here on the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Been a lot of fun on the show today, man. We appreciate you being along for the ride, whether it was the entire show, entire hour, one segment, 1 minute. Doesn't matter to me. Just glad that you're here and hope that you enjoyed what we had for you this afternoon. If you did, however, miss any of today's show, you can always go back and listen to the podcast version. We take the show audio and put it up for you on our station website at ESPNAU.com, or if you're listening on the Radio Alabama app, you can also and find it there and be a part of it there as well. And we've talked a lot of quarterback stuff today. We talked about Jackson Arnold, Deuce Knight, kind of what the expectations are, if there is a leash on Jackson Arnold this year and kind of what that could look like moving forward. Also, Christian, who is not here today, my co-host Christian Griffin, who is out today, he did call in, however, and we talked a little bit about overhyped and underhyped quarterbacks going into the 2025 season around the SEC. And then we talked breaking news as Auburn makes a flip from Penn State to Auburn, a four-star quarterback in Peyton Falzone. Talked a lot about that today. More on that tomorrow on the show, I'm sure, as well. And then we just got off the phone with Chris Gordy, the host of the Locked On SEC podcast, where we covered baseball, basketball, and football. That's pretty good for a June Thursday, if you ask me. So again, check it out on our station website at ESPNAU.com. And coming up on tomorrow's show, it is Free For All Friday. Christian will not be here again tomorrow, but I've called in a pinch hitter. I've called in possibly his replacement, depending on how it goes. No, I'm kidding. Lance Dahl, good friend of ours, who has covered Auburn for a long time. He's also the host of Locked On Kentucky. He's going to be with us in the studio for the entire 2 hours. So he'll be our pinch-hitting co-host for tomorrow. We're going to talk about football recruiting for Auburn. We're talking some basketball things. We'll get some updates on Kentucky as well from his perspective on the basketball side of things. I don't think he's going to want to talk about football but in Lexington. But we're going to have a lot of fun on a free-for-all Friday tomorrow. So that's going to be, again, with Lance Dahl in the studio with myself. That'll be tomorrow here on ESPN 106.7 and ESPNAU.com. Again, appreciate you all being along for the ride. If you missed it, check it out, ESPNAU.com. We're back tomorrow, okay, 2 to 4 right here on ESPN 106.7. Don't forget, NBA Draft Day 2 coming up tonight, 6:30 here on the station. So check it out. You can find Day 2. That's where we're hoping Jani Broome hears his name called, so you can check that out. However you tune into this station, it'll be there. The Drive is from 4 to 6, and then NBA Draft coverage Day 2 will start at 6:30. Okay, back tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.